We'll start as we need to go on. We have a beautiful session today planned by His Holiness Sachinanda Maharaj, and also some updates as part of our revamp of, or rather our efforts with the alumni system. We're trying to keep you updated as to what's happening on a monthly basis. Specifically, every last Saturday of the month, we'll be having a session. So this is as part of that. So we'll be having inspiration by His Holiness Sachinanda Maharaj, some updates on mantra roots, on the retreat center, and another project as well. And then we'll be having an optional games evening, which will be part of the evening, just to bring us together as a family, I guess. So without too much delay, we want to hand over to His Holiness for his inspirational address. And perhaps we can, with the mute button still on, welcome Maharaj with three loud high words. Arrivo!
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 His Holiness Sachinanda Maharaj, ki.
Hare Krishna. I would like to welcome every one of you affectionately. I am seeing also James there. Hare Bol, James. And of course, Naveen Krishna and Yashoda Sutta Prabhu. Very, very nice to address you. And I think, in a way, with these meetings, we will create a very good energy, a very good consciousness amongst us, a very good connection and relationship from which many nice byproducts will come, like personal encouragement and inspiration that is always coming up between like-minded people, and most probably also manifestations of this in terms of projects. I would like to address all of you with a subject I feel really inspired about, subject which I feel also is extremely useful to all of you. It is transforming desires. I think we all know from our own experience in life how powerful desires are. In one of the Upanishads, there is a quote which says, "As a person's desire is, so is his destiny. For as his desire is, so is his will. As his will is, so is his deed. And as his deed is, so are his consequences, good and bad." Desires are just so important that they are even the fundament of this whole world. You will remember reading in the Bhagavad Gita in the 15th chapter how this whole banyan tree of the world, this inverted and reflected tree, rests on desires, just like a mirror, an image of a tree which is reflected in the lake, is resting on desires. Desires have brought you to Krishna consciousness. Desires have maintained you in Krishna consciousness so far. Desires have made you enter a grihastha, the grihastha ashram, if you did. Desires have made you, that have helped you to make the choice to stay either single or a monk. Desires are absolutely formative to us, and Krishna only listens to our desires. He listens to the desires of the conditioned soul, and then the whole world is set into motion in order to either fulfill the desires, or if it is karmically not the time, to not fulfill them. Today I would like to share with you something that gives us an insight how Krishna feels about our desires. It is a text from the fifth canto, chapter 19, text 27, and I would like to recite it in Sanskrit, then go to the translation, and later read at the, read to you parts of the purport, which will really amaze and astonish you. Sadyam dishadyati tamatito ninam naivatato yat punatita yata svayam vidate bhajatam anichatam ichabidanam nichaparapalavam. Translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead fulfills the material desires of a devotee who approaches him with such material motives. He fulfills our desires, but he does not bestow benedictions upon the devotee that will cause him to demand more and more benedictions. However, the Lord willingly gives the devotee shelter at his own lotus feet, even though such a person does not really aspire for it. And that shelter satisfies all desires. So here in the text it says that Krishna fulfills the desires which we have, but in a special way, that we will not go for these desires again and again and wish more because we are not satisfied by them. Krishna satisfies our hunger, our inner hunger, but while doing it, he simultaneously gives us the ultimate shelter of his lotus feet. Because this is something very deep, I want to give an example. When I came to Krishna consciousness, I brought with me two very strong desires. One was, I wanted to see Sweden, which is the country of my ancestors. My line, so to say, can be traced back to Sweden. My grandfather immigrated to Germany from Sweden. So I wanted to see the land of my ancestor. The second is, I wanted to somehow go either by motorcycle or any other adventurous transportation to India from Germany. And normally people who are hungry for travel go to a country and then again they are not satisfied and they go to another country and another country and another country. And they become adventurers who constantly are on the move. You can meet these when you travel. But I still remember one day when I was in Krishna consciousness, I found myself in Sweden. I was giving a lecture in Uppsala, where I heard my ancestors come from. That's a Swedish town. And as I was in Sweden, I somehow lost my footloose nature. I thought, this is enough. The same happened to me with my second desire, an adventure. I actually went with a group of devotees with two buses. We were about, I guess, like 20 brahmacharis from Germany to India. And it was such an adventure. In Turkey, we went out of the buses and we did Kirtan in a Turkish village. But somehow, because we didn't know the layout of the village, we ended up in a woman's quarter or something, where men were not allowed. And people gave us such tough resistance. They came with guns at us. And I had an idea. I said to one devotee, just quickly run to the bus and get our box of candy, which we had reserved for the children in India. So the candy box came, and people had by now started shouting at us. I heard some triggers clicking at the guns, and I just took my hand into the candy box, big one like this, and threw candies at the people. And the people, very poor people, they bent down to reach for the candies, and we ran to our buses and ran away. It was adventure. This is my point. Krishna gave me also the adventure. I must say, I'm free from this desire to have an adventure. Even the lockdown, which is for some of us a great tapasya, is not a tapasya for me at all. I don't have the need to move anywhere any longer and have an expensive adventure any longer. No, I'm just happy to chant, because Krishna, I feel, has given me the fulfillment of desire, my material desires, in Krishna consciousness, but simultaneously he has given me shelter at his lotus feet. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives an explanation of this. He said he is like a father. He sees his little boy wants to eat dirt, but instead of giving him dirt, he gives him candies, something which is much better, so that the boy will not enjoy eating dirt any longer. And it is this idea which Prabhupada takes up in his purport. He speaks about Dhruva Maharaj. Dhruva Maharaj, like all of us, had mixed desires. All of us have mixed desires. There are spiritual desires in us, but at the same time, there may be still some material desires in us, like I gave you two examples from my life. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, we are somewhere between Prahlad Maharaj and Hiranyakashipu. Prahlad has saintly desires. He is a great devotee. He wants to only go and serve Krishna. And Hiranyakashipu is the same, is the exact opposite. His name relates to material desires. He wants gold and he wants sensual pleasures, no? And sometimes very badly he wants to enjoy. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, we are somewhere in between. We are borderline in philosophy, you know better. We say we are tatashta, marginal shakti, just like the strip on the beach, you know, that which is right at the ocean. It is sometimes covered with water when a wave comes, and sometimes when the wave recedes, it's in the air, it's covered with air, so to say. So in the same way, we are sometimes covered with the water of material desires, and when that goes away, we have spiritual desires. So Dhruva Maharaj wanted a kingdom, Prabhupada says, but when he Dhruva Maharaj, for example, became a bhakta with a motive of getting a better kingdom than that of his father. But finally he became an Akama Bhakta, means a Bhakta without any desires, and said to the Lord, Swamin Kritatosmi Varam Nayache. My dear Lord, I am very satisfied simply to serve your lotus feet. I do not want any material benefits. So this is how Krishna deals with us. Srila Prabhupada picks up this point from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. He says, sometimes it is found that a small child eats dirty things, but his parents take away the dirty things and offer him a sandesh or some other sweetmeat. Exactly how Krishna thinks, we will deal with a little bit later. I first want to take you to a process how our desires gestate or mature, how from the thinking we go to the want or willing. Because if we know this process, we know how to move forward in Krishna consciousness. This is how desires form. First comes thinking. We become aware of a possibility, and maybe a little scent of wish, desires, forms. We are still attached. It doesn't have to be like this. For instance, we may think, well, after lockdown, it would be an idea to travel to America, see the places which we saw at the Pandavasena trip, or which we have heard about, or even see other places. It's just an awareness, a very small awareness of a possibility which I have, but I'm still detached. This is thinking. Now, if we allow the desire to mature in us, at one stage we will attach an emotion to it. We will think, actually, it's a good idea for me to go to America. Maybe I have also some chances to meet the ideal life partner whom I marry later. You know, when we are an unmarried person and we consider marriage as something. Or maybe it's just good for me to get out to see different devotees, different possibilities. I think I want this. So at this moment, it's more than just thinking about it or contemplating an opportunity. The desire has gestated, or it has grown from the initial seed into something which is now stronger, because an emotion is attached to it. And then finally comes willing. That means an intention or a firm resolve comes that I want to make something happen for real now. I become committed to it. I become relentlessly, without allowing any hesitation, to go for it. And I say, let me go for this. This is the general gestation of desires, which you must know when you deal with your desires. Some are weak, then they get stronger, and then they form into what is called a willingness to actually do this. So this same process you can also apply in your Krishna consciousness. You can think, there can be an awareness, oh, I could actually become a self-realized soul. others have become, Krishan has become. Oh, actually, there is a possibility for me to lead a blissful, ecstatic life in Krishna consciousness. Wow! It's a possibility. But how, we have to ask ourselves, will I now come from the awareness of a slight possibility to actually feeling for it and then becoming so strong that I become determined and fully committed? My dear devotees, and my dear friends, and my dear skeptics also, now you need to listen very attentively. Now we will get to the essence. How can we come from, how can we become fully committed without any doubt, with great determination, with what is called ekagra in Sanskrit, one-pointedness? The answer is, you have to now attach to this initial thinking an emotion which goes to, I want this, I like this, I really appreciate it, this is my path. And there are two ways which I want to recommend to you. First of all, strengthen your knowledge about it by reading in the scriptures. I beg you, I really am very serious about it. Make a commitment to read every day, at least for 15 minutes, 1:05, 1:05, in the Bhagavatam. If you can't give this much time to the Bhagavatam, give 10 minutes a day. If you cannot give 10 minutes a day, 5 minutes, but regularly you have to read the Bhagavatam. Please do it. It will change something. You will hear the vague possibility for you will become, oh yeah, and I read about devotees there. And second of all, please associate with devotees who have that devotional feeling, who have these, who are fired up, who are inspired, who are approaching Krishna consciousness with some commitment. Then as you do this, you will all of a sudden see a strong willingness, a happy willingness, an unforced willingness, a natural willingness, how do you say this in good English? And for lack of better word, an absolutely natural and inspiring commitment will be there, which comes deep from inside, because you have gestated, you have matured from an awareness of a possibility to, this is what I want. By the simple process of gestating your desire. And one thing you need to know, Krishna will help you if you turn to him and pray to him. I want to read to you from this amazing purport something, what goes on in the mind of Krishna as he becomes aware of your sometimes mixed desires, where you want this one thing and then, and you're disturbed. Sometimes you're not happy. Oh, why do I still am so mixed up? Why do always these material desires disturb me? How does Krishna feel about you? Please listen. Prabhupada, translate. Anyakami. It's in the purport. A devotee, the Lord thinks, may desire something other than service to the lotus feet of the Lord. But if he engages in Lord Krishna's service, no? If he turns to Krishna, Krishna gives him shelter at his lotus feet, even though he does not aspire for it. The Lord says, he is engaged in my service, but he wants the benefit of material sense gratification. Such a devotee is like a person who asks me for poison instead of nectar. That is his foolishness. But I am experienced, Krishna says, I am experienced. Ami Vigya. Why should I give such a foolish person the dirty things of material enjoyment? It would be better for me to give him shelter at my lotus feet. I shall cause him to forget these material desires. Yes, if one engages in the service of the Lord for sense gratification, the result is that he ultimately gets a taste for serving the lotus feet of the Lord. He then gives up all material desires and wants to become a servant of the Lord. Please, my dear devotees, read this in your reading time. It's 5:19:27. Maybe Radhika Ranjan can post it in the chat box. 5:19:27 of the Bhagavatam. Yes. Yes, here it is. It's a really, really good reading matter. And I really think that it is very encouraging. First of all, Krishna sees that we are still dealing with conflicting desires. And he doesn't think this is a problem. He says, I will give him, but in such a way that he actually becomes a happy person, fully engaged in Krishna consciousness. And I feel really this Sangha which we have here, this association where we seriously meet in a small group of, you know, Radhika Ranjan said, the alumni family, not in a group of people who have something to do with each other, who know each other, and we talk about these things, we will become stronger in our spiritual orientation, and we will ultimately like to render service for Krishna. Good. I'm looking now at my time. I have spoken not everything I wanted to speak because there's still one point, but we want to honor the time here. We don't want to go over time. So I will end here. I wish to know what will we do next. Maybe Radhika Ranjan, you tell us.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Maharaj, for kindly sharing your time with us, for sharing how we can purify our desires, mature our desires. And this verse that's in the chat box, please all kindly make a note of it, 5:19:27, Srimad Bhagavatam, if you wanted more on that purport. Thank you so much, Maharaj. We will look forward to the third part. Maybe we can have another session soon where we can hear the third way in which we can purify our desires. The second of which you mentioned was associating with serious devotees who have a conviction, an inner conviction. And so I guess our alumni project is a nice follow-on into our alumni project's presentation, where we'll be hearing about the various updates from the retreat center, from the student accommodation.